You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
And now a word from our sponsor, SpyCloud, the leader in operationalizing cybercrime analytics. Traditional threat intelligence is a thing of the past. Cyber criminals are stealing vast amounts of credentials, session cookies, and financial data every day, and it's hard to keep up. SpyCloud is the trusted partner businesses turn to fully understand their darknet exposure risk and neutralize threats before it's too late. SpyCloud alerts your organization as soon as an employee or customer's data appears on the darknet, so you can act faster than bad actors to prevent cyber attacks like ransomware, session hijacking, account takeover, and online fraud. With insights from the industry's largest repository of recaptured data, protect the digital identities and systems most important to your business. Get your free corporate darknet exposure report at spycloud.com/cyberwire and see what information criminals have in their hands today. That's spycloud.com/cyberwire. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the CyberWire's Research Saturday. I'm Dave Bittner, and this is our weekly conversation with researchers and analysts tracking down the threats and vulnerabilities, solving some of the hard problems, and protecting ourselves in a rapidly evolving cyberspace. Thanks for joining us.
Well, we're working with a couple of customers that were hit with the Windows side of this exploitation. They had some compliment servers attacked. And as the team were researching through, they saw there's also a Linux variant as well, and that kind of piqued their interest.
That's Christopher Doman, co-founder and CTO at Cato Security. The research we're discussing today is titled Cerber Ransomware, Dissecting the Three Heads. Well, let's start with some real fundamentals here. I mean, you mentioned the Windows variant, which I suppose is the more well-known version of this. Can you describe to us what's the background and history of this particular ransomware package?
Sure. So the ransomware in question is called Cerber. It's actually pretty old. First came out around 2016. It's kind of interesting as one of the early ransomware as a service variants. So you could pay on a Russian language forum about $500, get a copy of Cerber, and then every time you encrypt some with that or ransom some of that, about 5% of the money that you extorted from your victims will also go to the operator of that ransomware. Then going forwards a bit to end of last year, there's some attacks against Atlassian Confluence, so a kind of documentation site, and people were using a vulnerability there to install Cerber ransomware. And there's some good coverage at the time on those Windows attacks from people like SentinelOne and Trend Micro, but not much on the Linux side, which we kind of uncovered as we're going through this.
Well, let's dig into it on the Linux side then. What is the backstory there? When did it show up on our radar?
So interestingly, there were a couple of kind of shadows of this attack. So people were seeing that there was potentially some other exploitation URLs people were using, but nothing was really documented around those. I don't think anyone managed to get through to the kind of second stage of those attacks and worked out what they'd look like on Linux. Nate and our team, to his credit, did some pretty hardcore reversing. So he went through and he found it then deploy on these vulnerable systems via a couple of mechanisms I can go into in a bit, and then it would do some interesting stuff around the ransoming.
Well, let's dig into the details then. What exactly did you all uncover?
Sure. So the first stage, the exploitation, looks just the same as some of the other Windows exploitation we've seen before against Atlassian's Confluence server and data center products. So there's this functionality where you can essentially update or change the configuration. By mistake, that wasn't authenticated. So anyone that hit that URL, with the post request in particular, could then do something where they could actually create their own admin user in Confluence. The second stage of the attack is installing a web shell. So some functionality like you run commands against that system. Interestingly, you actually essentially upload a plugin. So there's a plugin in your installation called Web Shell or something like that. And then we then use that to install the malware. In this case, it worked in two stages. So the first stage, we basically check around for some logs, check it was installed correctly. We then download the second stage. I think maybe they wanted to protect their ransomware, which actually do the ransoming. It would go through, it would encrypt the files, kind of as you expect, but because quite correctly, this Confluence product doesn't run as an administrator user by default, it wouldn't be able to encrypt every single file. It would do a couple of things to make sure it could still go through. But basically, you end up, as you expect, with a couple of notes saying, please pay us in Bitcoin, and a bunch of files ransomed.
Mm. One of the things you highlight in the research is the fact that this is executed using C++, and that's sort of falling by the wayside when it comes to Linux.
Yeah, that's right. Far more popular these days is Rust or Python. So one thing, there's kind of a wider development praxis where I think most modern developers don't start learning C++ anymore. But also Rust and Python are great at being a little bit more cross-platform. So you can write your malware once or run across more environments, potentially a bit more stable as well, where some of these kind of more old-school C++ variants weren't. But again, this all goes back to Server being a pretty old piece of tech, actually. So you know, it's almost 10 years old now, the original variants of Server.
And who do we suppose is behind Server? Do we know?
So it's interesting because of that ransomware as a service operation. There's two parts to this. One is whoever's actually running the infrastructure, creating that malware. And then secondly, whoever's doing those attacks. So if you go back to the start of Server, there was in a way better attribution then than more recently. It was first sold on some Russian language forums. There's a good article by Sensei where they talk about this. And they were saying, look, here's a new ransomware. Please try it out. I'll give you a discount if you're on the first people to use it. So Russian language forums with essentially contractors or affiliates, then buying it from those people, then deploying it. In terms of the attribution on this individual attack, we don't actually know. We did try and look around, but we couldn't find much, given that all we really get is a ransomware note and an email address saying, no, send us the money.
We'll be right back. And now, a word from our sponsor, Sixsense. Sixsense provides award-winning cloud-based automated endpoint and vulnerability management solutions to streamline IT and security operations. With its advanced platform, businesses gain complete visibility and control over their infrastructure, reducing IT and security risks and optimizing operational efficiency. With Sixsense, you'll get real-time alerts, risk-based vulnerability prioritization and remediations, and an intuitive automation and orchestration engine so you can focus on your core business goals, confident in the knowledge that your enterprise is secure, compliant, and running smoothly. To learn why enterprises choose Sixsense, visit sixsense.com. And what are your recommendations then for folks to best protect themselves here?
Well, there's a couple of things. Obviously, patch, do actually update that server. The updated version, which hasn't got the vulnerability in, has been around for a few months now. But there's also much more than that as well. If you look at Atlassian's official documentation, they say, talk to your security team, or if you don't have one, please get one, which is, I know, it's phrased in an interesting
practical
way. They are Australian. Yeah. I am too, so maybe it's direct.
I see.
The really key point is that you have to actually investigate the infection after it's happened, because you need to work out what's happened. For one thing, if you simply just go and delete the ransomware, restore from a backup, that doesn't necessarily fix the problem. You check to make sure that plugin, that web shell, isn't still installed. Otherwise, you can get re-ransomed again straight away. And then we haven't seen it in these attacks, but there are a few people using this vulnerability. It's also good to find out if they've stolen things like credentials. Are they going to move to other systems? Other kind of things that ideally you'd be checking to if you have those kind of capabilities.
It's interesting to me, as you mentioned, how long this ransomware has been around. I mean, is it fair to say it's tried and true, and that's been why it has stuck around as long as it has?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it's tried and tested. It works across multiple operating systems, as seen here with Linux. I think it also is a pretty cheap piece of ransomware, too. If you can buy in at $400, and then they're asking for $2,000 payment, your ROI there, your return on investment's pretty fast. So this isn't the kind of big game ransomware. I know you did a recent episode on some of those healthcare ransomwares with some crazy numbers of damage and impact there. This is more targeting kind of SMBs that might be running this software most of the time.
Yeah, it's a fascinating subgroup, I guess. It's all, I liken it to almost being like a nuisance ransomware. You know, it's probably not going to bring down the business, but for the people who are operating it, there's still money to be made.
Yeah, I think that's entirely fair. These servers generally are the most key systems. They're not exactly a manufacturing line. They're basic documentation, but there might be some sensitive things in there. So maybe the impact isn't high enough to justify a massive ransom. You normally see those when someone takes down an entire network and they spend maybe weeks going around trying to find all the key systems, deleting the backups, etc. In this case, this is pretty much spray and hope for the best. At the time this vulnerability came out, there were about 5,000 vulnerable systems when it first came out. And quite quickly, people realized this was going on. So if you hit 5,000 systems, maybe half of those, the ransomware system exploits against, and then maybe 10% pay, that money still adds up. But it's not, like you say, maybe it's more of a nuisance than a massive kind of campaign.
Our thanks to Christopher Doman from Cato Security for joining us. The research is titled Cerber Ransomware, Dissecting the Three Heads. We'll have a link in the show notes.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
And now a word from our sponsor, Netskope. Netskope is a worldwide leader in SASE and Zero Trust. Its unified platform, Netskope One, provides optimized access and zero trust security for people, devices, and data anywhere they go, helping customers reduce risk, accelerate performance, and get unrivaled visibility into any cloud, web, and private application activity. To learn more about how Netskope helps customers be ready for anything on their SASE journey, visit netskope.com. CyberWire Research Saturday podcast is a production of N2K Networks. N2K Strategic Workforce Intelligence optimizes the value of your biggest investment, your people. We make you smarter about your team while making your team smarter. Learn more at n2k.com. This episode was produced by Liz Stokes. Our mixer is Elliot Peltzman. Our executive producers are Jennifer Iben and Brandon Karp. Our executive editor is Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here next time.